I want you to completely erase how you think about writing code. Seriously, whatever mental model you have right now, whether you picture yourself, you know, typing instructions line by line or a machine moving ones and zeros around, just throw it out.
Yeah, you really have to let go of the whole text document mindset.
Exactly. Because what if writing a Python script isn't just like typing a to-do list for a computer? What if you were actually defining the physical laws of a mathematical universe? Imagine that writing code is practically identical to calculating the physical trajectory of a rocket flying through space.
It's a massive paradigm shift. I mean, we are entirely conditioned to view software as text. You read it top to bottom. The compiler reads it top to bottom. But the source material we're looking at today just shatters that illusion.
It really does. So our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a highly theoretical document detailing the code of mathematics, or COM, which is built on something called the ODE-CCT framework. We are going to decode how basic, everyday programming syntax actually maps flawlessly to continuous mathematics, physics, and even thermodynamics.
Right, and to set the stage here, the core axiom of this text is that a program is not a static script. It is a conditional trajectory generator on a syntactic manifold.
Wow.
Which sounds incredibly dense, I know.
Yeah.
But it essentially means that when you write code, you are building a geometric landscape. And when you run that code, you're launching an object across that landscape. And it's governed by continuous physics and entropy.
We definitely need to unpack this carefully because translating our everyday programming vocabulary into this new mathematical reality is, well, it's the only way we're going to wrap our heads around it. Let's ground the abstract math into a physical action. Let's pretend that writing and running a program is exactly like throwing a baseball.
The physical analogy works beautifully here. Mm-hmm. If we start with standard Python, you know, you usually begin by defining a class. Under the Code of Mathematics framework, a class isn't merely a blueprint for an object. The source calls it a manifold.
Okay.
So in your baseball analogy, the class is the physical universe itself. It defines the dimensions, the boundaries, the literal reality where the ball is allowed to exist.
It sets the allowable state space.
Exactly.
And once we have that universe, we write the init method. You know, normally we just call that a constructor to set our starting variables. But under this framework, init is the stationary seed. It represents the initial condition of an ordinary differential equation.
Right. So picture the pitcher holding the baseball on the mound. The init method fixes the exact starting coordinates in this physical universe before any motion happens. It anchors the trajectory in phase space.
Phase space.
Yeah, which, if you're a bit rusty on the physics terminology, simply means the mathematical arena containing every single possible state your program's variables could ever occupy at any given moment.
Okay, so the pitcher has the balls, the coordinates are set, then we get to the actual methods, the def blocks. We usually think of these as little lists of actions for the program to perform, you know, add these numbers, fetch this data. But in this framework, methods are vector fields. They are the dynamics generators.
They act as the literal laws of physics for this universe. The methods are the gravity pulling the baseball down or the wind pushing it to the left. They're the invisible, continuous forces that dictate how that baseball will move through the manifold you just created.
Which fundamentally redefines what a correct program is. The document outlines the COM law. And according to this law, correctness has absolutely nothing to do with passing a syntax check.
Right, because a syntax check just confirms that the baseball exists.
Yeah, and that gravity is a mathematically valid concept. It doesn't mean the throw is actually going to reach the catcher. Your code can be perfectly formatted, completely syntax error-free, and still crash spectacularly when you run it.
That's the thing. Under the COM law, a program only works if its path is stable and converges to a low entropy observable.
Meaning,
does the trajectory of the system reach a stable, predictable destination, or does it just spiral off into mathematical chaos? Execution is literally the numerical integration of this physical system over time.
Let's focus on that execution phase. We've built our mathematical universe. The pitcher is holding the ball. The gravity and wind are defined. We hit run, and the ball leaves the hand. Now, I have to push back a little on the straightforward physics analogy here. It makes total sense for a script that runs top to bottom like a straight line throw, but you and I both know code rarely works that way. Think about loops. If I write a while loop, my code isn't flying gracefully through space. It feels like it's getting stuck in a trap.
Tasting in a cage, yeah.
Exactly. Going in circles until some arbitrary condition is met. How does continuous math account for a program pacing back and forth in a cage?
Well, the framework introduces the ODE-CCT bridge specifically to address this. It explains how discrete programming logic translates into continuous flows.
Mm-hmm.
And a while loop is not a trap at all. The source defines it as a continuous limit or a fixed point solver. It is a conditional evolution.
So it's not pacing in a cage, it's orbiting.
Closer to an orbit that is slowly decaying toward a center point. Think about a while loop waiting for a variable to reach zero. The loop isn't just spinning its wheels blindly, it's navigating the phase space, iteratively searching for mathematical stability.
Oh, wow.
And it only halts when it reaches what the document calls an entropy collapse threshold.
Okay, if you are listening to this and wondering why this theoretical math matters for your day-to-day coding, this concept of entropy collapse is the massive payoff. This document frames the entire concept of computing around thermodynamics.
It really does. The framework introduces a core economic metric for all computation, delta over W. It treats your computer like a thermodynamic engine.
Right. So if del U is our compute budget, the literal processing power, the floating point operations, or like the electricity we have to spend, then delta must be what we are buying with that budget, the actual result.
Delta is semantic collapse. It represents certainty. When a program first starts running, its final outcome is completely unknown. It exists in a state of high entropy, high uncertainty.
Makes sense.
As the program executes, as the baseball navigates the vector fields of your methods, it is spending W to buy delta. It is paying with computational work to physically collapse the entropy of the system.
You are literally spending a budget of compute to buy reality.
Yes.
The program is an engine turning electrical work into a collapsed, stable state. And when the entropy drops to absolute zero, when all uncertainty is removed, you hit the return statement. The source actually calls the return statement the observable collapse.
Because it projects that hidden mathematical journey into a measurable output.
Exactly. The answer is found. The ball is in the catcher's mitt.
But we have to consider the failure state. What happens if the system runs out of money? What if your computer exhausts its compute budget, its W, before the entropy drops to zero?
Well, in my day-to-day life, that's an out-of-memory error or a timeout. But the document frames this beautifully. It says the program fails with trajectory ambiguity.
It is a pure thermodynamic failure. The system couldn't reach a stable fixed point with the energy resources provided.
The ball is still in the air.
Yeah, the universe is still chaotic, and the physics engine simply ran out of power to calculate where it lands.
So if calculating the physics of a single script is this resource intensive, we have to ask how this scales. Because modern software is never just one script. It's massive, interconnected, object-oriented architectures with dozens of classes inheriting from each other.
Right.
The text has a radical take on inheritance. Usually if I create a parent class and then a child class that inherits from it, I view it as simple copy-pasting. The child gets all the parent's variables to save me from typing them again.
Which the text politely categorizes as a beginner's illusion. I know, but the true mathematical reality is that inheritance is manifold extension. You aren't copying anything. You are lifting the parent's mathematics into a higher dimensional space.
Let's visualize that. Think about drawing a square on a flat piece of paper. That is your parent class. It has its own invariant laws, its own 2D physics. When a child class inherits from that parent, it doesn't just redraw the square on a new piece of paper.
No, it pulls that flat square up by the corners to create a 3D cube.
Okay, I see it.
It preserves the core structure, the stationary core, but expands the probability space. But adding a dimension introduces a problem. How do you guarantee the new 3D cube still obeys the fundamental rules of the original 2D square?
Well, in Python, you write superdot init to call the parent's initialization.
And under this framework, superdot init acts as trajectory anchoring. It ensures that the child object's trajectory starts firmly anchored on the invariant manifold of the parent.
So it's tied down.
Exactly. The child might have extra dimensions to explore, but it still fundamentally respects the gravity and laws of the universe it was born from.
But sometimes you want to change those laws. If you use a method override, you take a function from the parent and completely rewrite it for the child. How does the physics engine handle you actively changing the rules of gravity for one specific object?
An override is a local bifurcation. You are bending the mathematical vector field in a very specific region of the phase space.
You're literally altering the physics.
Yes. You alter the physical path of the program, so it deliberately diverges from the parent's natural geodesic trajectory.
Okay, this is fascinating theory, but why would an AI or a compiler care? Why view inheritance through the lens of manifold extension instead of just reading the text?
It all comes back to the thermodynamic economy we discussed earlier, delta over W. By inheriting the parent's already collapsed mathematical path, an AI doesn't have to re-verify the baseline physics of the universe.
Yeah.
The parent's minimal collapse heuristics are cached.
So if the parent class has already proven mathematically that its version of gravity works and is stable, the AI doesn't spend a single FLOP recalculating gravity for the child class.
Not one.
It only spends its compute budget validating the new dimension. It only spends W on the local bifurcation, the override.
The computational savings are astronomical. The system navigates a hierarchy of theory spaces, hunting for the absolute cheapest path to certainty. It only spends energy on the new chaos introduced by the child.
If calculating these new dimensions is so computationally expensive, human engineers must have instinctively figured out ways to cheat the system and save compute. Is that where design patterns come in?
They absolutely are. Navigating these inherited mathematical spaces can become incredibly chaotic. Engineers developed design patterns decades ago as architectural blueprints or best practices to keep code organized.
Right, like the classic textbook patterns.
Yeah. But under the ODE CCT framework, they aren't just coding habits. They are entropy collapse control primitives.
They are thermodynamic valves used to control chaos. Let's look at how they mechanically save computational energy, starting with the factory pattern. Normally, a factory is just a piece of code that centralizes the creation of objects, so you don't have to deal with the messy setup details every time you need a new one.
Under this architecture, a factory is a stationary configuration engine. Think about the exact moment an object is created, the init phase. If the parameters are vague or complex, the system has high initial entropy. It has to spend a lot of W just searching for a valid, stable starting point on the manifold.
I see. It's like buying pre-assembled furniture instead of a box of loose planks. If I buy the planks, I have to spend my own energy, my own W, interpreting the instructions, testing which screws fit, and managing the chaos of assembly in my living room. But a factory pattern delivers the pre-assembled chair.
The factory pre-collapses the initialization entropy. It caches valid starting manifolds. So instead of the compiler evaluating the physics of creation every single time a new instance is spawned across your code base, the factory delivers a pre-collapsed trajectory seed. The setup energy drops to practically zero.
It skips the chaos of assembly and just drops a stable object into the universe. What about the observer pattern? In everyday coding, we use this when one part of a program needs to notify other parts that something happened, like clicking a button on a website to update your shopping cart.
The framework translates the observer pattern as an asynchronous entropy monitor. Let's look at the alternative. If a program constantly polls another part of the system asking, "Did you change yet? Did you change yet?"
It's wasting compute.
Exactly. It is wasting its compute budget evaluating a stable system. It is continuously burning W without gaining any delta.
It's spending FLOPs to confirm what it already knows. It's like paying a guard to stare at an empty hallway 24/7.
Perfect analogy. The observer pattern replaces the guard with a tripwire. It allows the system to wait lazily. It monitors projections of the phase space without evaluating the full equations.
Oh, that's smart.
It only triggers a collapse event. It only wakes up and uses compute when the system's trajectory actually breaches a specific mathematical boundary.
The system stays dormant at zero computational cost until the threshold is crossed. It minimizes the cost of monitoring. Okay, let's look at the third one featured in the text, the strategy pattern. In textbooks, this lets you swap out different algorithms on the fly based on the situation.
In our continuous physics reality, the strategy pattern acts as an adaptive dynamical router. It is actively monitoring the entropy trajectory of the program as it runs.
Right.
If the current mathematical path starts generating too much chaos, if the system detects an entropy spike that threatens to exhaust the W budget, the strategy pattern intervenes.
It swaps the vector fields mid-flight?
Yes. It alters the governing physics to ensure the system doesn't crash into trajectory ambiguity. If the path gets too turbulent, it shifts the execution to a more robust, stable vector field to guarantee the most efficient delta over W path.
Wow.
It dynamically matches the algorithmic complexity to the real-time entropy of the system.
It's changing the laws of physics while the baseball is in the air to ensure it still lands safely in the glove, using the least amount of energy possible.
You start to realize that these design patterns aren't just arbitrary rules made up by programmers in the 1990s. They are fundamental, naturally occurring control loops for thermodynamic systems. The factory pattern minimizes initial chaos. The observer pattern minimizes monitoring costs. The strategy pattern adapts to runtime turbulence.
They work together.
Exactly. They form a closed-loop system designed to navigate complex mathematical spaces with minimal energy.
It really forces you to view your daily work through an entirely new lens. Think about the last time you wrote a script. You weren't writing syntactic rituals for a machine to read. You were acting as an architect of thermodynamic spaces.
Oh, you really were.
Every class you define, every loop you structure, every design pattern you implement is just a tool to coax a volatile mathematical reality into a stable state.
And if we follow that logic to its natural conclusion, it leads to a profound implication for the future of software and artificial intelligence. The source text teases a concept at the very end of its Fibonacci recurrence cycle. It refers to it as geometric verification theory.
Okay, so if code correctness is truly just finding the minimal energy physics path that guarantees a program reaches a stable fixed point without spinning out into chaos or exhausting its compute budget, well, then what?
Then compiling code as we know it is fundamentally obsolete. The AI compilers of the future might stop reading code entirely. They wouldn't bother running syntax checks or hunting for missing semicolons in a text file.
Wait, really? They'd just skip reading it?
Yeah. They would simply take your program, drop it into a simulated physical universe as a geometric object, let it roll down the manifold, and just watch to see if it mathematically stabilizes.
That is wild. If the object rolls to the bottom of the valley and stops without burning up, the code is bug-free.
It replaces parsing text with simulating physics. You don't need to read the pitcher's mind or analyze the grammar of their throw to know the gravity worked. Oh. You just watch the trajectory.
The ultimate test of your software becomes a literal physics simulation. That is an incredible concept, and it is something for you to ponder until the next deep dive. Keep questioning the space you're building in, and we will see you next time.